Hey folks, it's Adam Summer for the Heartland Pod. On this episode, I have a chat with Rabbi Daniel Bogard coming out of St. Louis. I want to remind you before we get to the chat, you can check out Promo Missouri at promoonline.org. Stay informed with the latest on legislative news regarding LGBTQ plus individuals and how to get engaged. Sign up for their fast action group. They have it on their website at promoonline.org. And to support our shows and the work that we do here, you can sign up as a Patreon member by going to heartlandpod.com, clicking on the Patreon link to sign up today. Every single level gets you something extra, and at $5 a month, we have extra shows, so you can support this independent media and the work that we're doing to bring you interviews like this one with Rabbi Daniel Bogard. Okay, we're here for a chat, and I have with me Rabbi Daniel Bogard. I've got a little bit of bio here for you. Native of St. Louis, spent some time across the heartland in various capacities from St. Paul to Peoria to Cincinnati, back home in St. Louis now. Serves the board of directors for the Interfaith Coalition of Latin America and also advocates for undocumented individuals in St. Louis through that work. Has worked with the Fight for 15, an effort to make minimum wage a living wage in the state of Missouri, and is one of the proud founders of Camp Indigo Point, which is a week-long sleepaway camp for transgender, expansive, and LGBTQ plus youth. Recently has been very active in the ongoing legislative attacks here in Missouri, which is just among the many states, by the way, against LGBTQ plus children and the hyper-targeting of trans children by Christian nationalists of the Republican Party. Rabbi Daniel, thank you for joining me on the Heartland Pod, and how are you doing?
Thanks for having me on. That was quite the introduction. Well done. Doing okay. I'm tired. We're leaving again tomorrow morning, bright and early, 5:30 a.m. to head back to Jeff City to testify against another three bills that they have targeting trans kids. It's pretty wild this session.
Yeah. So we're recording this the night of the 6th. I think we both finished up the bath and bed routines, and then we jump on here, and then so this will come out on the 7th. So as folks are making their way to Jeff City or thinking about what's going on in Jeff City today, this is a great episode for what's happening there for real. So make sure you share this with folks so that they know that this is what is happening. I'm aware of the bills. I am not 100% up on them, so I want to get into those bills. I do want to say you are officially the first rabbi on the Heartland Pod, so I think that makes you now the official
rabbi. I feel honored. The official rabbi of the Heartland Pod. I'm putting that on my business cards now. Yeah.
There you go. So can you give us a little background? I know you've already testified previously. There's some other bills. There's more bills. So what's kind of the package here in Missouri? And I think folks should understand, like, what we're about to talk about, you could do this entire episode and then just go through it and replace the word Missouri with a bunch of other states, and it probably would be the same episode, essentially.
Almost so. Every red state in the country. Yeah, and they're copy-paste jobs, right? These are the same bills everywhere. I'll tell you what is distinct in Missouri is simply the number of bills that we have. At one point, we had a quarter of all of the anti-LGBTQ bills in the country.
Wow.
Right here in the state of Missouri. Our legislators have made it pretty clear that targeting trans kids in particular is one of their real priorities this session. So there's a few different kinds of bills that we're seeing. The first are the sports bans that we hear about, right? Yeah. These are mostly targeting trans girls to try to prevent them from playing sports. And look, from my perspective, the first thing to understand about that is that there are more bills this session targeting trans girls than there are trans girls who have requested to play athletics in our state in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
This is a made up controversy that is targeting already some of the most bullied kids in our state. I mean, right. Can you imagine being a trans girl?
Right.
A high school in most places in Missouri.
Just being a kid in high school in general is like,
oh my God. Right. Like being 16 all over again. Yeah.
You add that, layer that on top of it, and then say, oh, and I want to go out for sports.
Yep.
You just layer all those things on top and imagine, yeah, exactly that. So you've been super vocal, not just on social media, but in-person testimony, like we just mentioned, you're going back. You were just there a couple of weeks ago. Why are you willing, or I guess last week? Was that just last week?
This will be the third time in 3 weeks I've been in Jeff City, unfortunately.
Yeah. So why are you willing to put yourself out front as a voice for trans youth? Because it's certainly, you know, it's got to be a bit of a lightning rod in certain ways.
Oh my God, it's awful. I've had death threats last year. I mean, it's awful. Look, I've got a trans kid. It was surprising and, you know, certainly not what I imagined life would be, but right. Isn't that life right there taking me in all sorts of different directions? And the first thing that you learn, when you love a trans kid in the state of Missouri is you have to protect them from their legislature.
Sure.
So I literally the first people, before I told his grandparents, the first people I told that my kid was trans was the General Laws Assembly or the General Laws Committee of the Missouri Legislature. I went and testified because you know it immediately that you have to protect them from their government. You know, happy to tell some of his story if that's helpful to your listeners.
But I do think so because, you know, we were talking before I hit record that, you know, while I think probably most of the folks listening to this are likely allies, likely support what you're doing. I know I do. I was thinking about this before I was making notes. So my daughter has a severe special need, right? I didn't know anything really about it. Obviously, I would have supported somebody with special needs and, you know, wheelchair accessibility and all that kind of stuff.
Until it's your world, right?
But it didn't, right. It's a different kind of thing. And now, you know, I see it everywhere I go. I see accessibility, right? It's just constantly on my mind. And how it plays into things. And because you start making decisions based on what you think you can handle. And I've got to imagine that it's similar in the world that you're inhabiting now. And so I think it's great for Connex for folks to understand it more, because as much as we may support it, truly knowing the world, I think, is a different story. So yeah, if you could just enlighten us.
Yeah, for sure. So my kid, and I should say that he's very much given permission to share these details.
Right.
Unfortunately, this is a part of what it means to fight back against.
And he's testified, right?
He has not testified. We don't let him testify because it goes on public record. He's a 9-year-old.
Oh, okay. He's nine. Okay.
But his brother has. His brother just did. So, gosh, when he was 2 and 3, I mean, from the first moment that he could express anything, he was choosing to take his brother's stuff. In particular, his older brother's clothes, and would wear them. And I mean, his older brother's underwear, which really stood out to us even when he was young, because it's such a personal thing, right? That's not about how the world sees you. It's about how you see yourself.
It's like every little kid will grab a parent's shoes, regardless of, you know,
exactly
which one, but that's way, the underwear drawer is a totally different world.
And all of his clothes, only wanted to wear his brother's clothes. Biggest fights we ever had. I mean, the biggest fights we ever had, probably still true. Were you know, when we made him wear a dress for his grandma's or great grandma's 90th birthday and things like that. So I'll never forget when he was 4, I was putting him to bed one night and he looked at me and he said, "Daddy, do you think God could make me over again as a boy?"
Wow.
Right. And this wasn't out of nowhere, because he'd always played with these boys' toys and he'd always wanted to wear boys' clothes and play with the boy, you know. And we tried not to be a gendering household anyhow, but I remember going back to my room that night and just freaking out a little bit. So he started begging from that point on to have a boy's haircut. And we were processing our own internalized transphobia. So, you know, he had this gorgeous long hair. First we cut it to his shoulders and then to his chin and then to his ears. And then the day we finally cut his hair short into a, you know, a short boy's haircut, he looked at us and he said, I'm a boy. And that was it. And that was actually, it was the day before lockdown, 2 days before lockdown. And we kept the kids home from school. So we figured, you know, 2 weeks and this whole COVID thing will be over.
Famously.
Yeah, exactly. And so he went back to school the next year with a different name and using boy words. And it was like the least big deal thing that has happened.
Right.
And the truth of it is, it continues to really not be a big deal in our lives. Him being trans is one of the least interesting parts of this kid. other than the fact that our government's at war with us because of it.
Yeah. I like what you're, you know, laying out the honesty of your own transphobia, because it is something that, you know, I think people
think so gendered.
Right. And they think of a word like that as like meaning that like some type of extreme reaction. And it can be as simple as just being taken aback and not knowing how to handle it like that, because you're certainly not expecting it, right? It's not like you, and of all the things as a parent that you're thinking are going to happen, that's probably not way up on the list of things that you're like, okay, well, how am I going to handle that conversation? So when it hits, I've got to imagine that that's a bit of a tester for the parental relationship at that point. And just how do you do it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, for us, first of all, I'm thankful that I have a number of trans adults who had been in our lives, who were close friends, who were right. So we had models too. That was helpful.
Sure. Yeah.
There was another kid at his school, a good friend of my 11-year-old, actually. They just testified together last week. Who's trans, but yeah, I mean, there was processing. You don't expect it, but right. I will tell you that by the time he transitioned, by the time he came to us and said, you know, call me this name and use boy words, it felt like a railroad that had been coming down the tracks for a while. It didn't surprise us at all by that point.
Yeah. The you made that comment, we're so gendered, and that is, yeah, I remember we have three kids now, and the first one going in to do the ultrasound and the tech saying, do you want me to tell you, you know, the gender? And we said, well, we figure that at some point the child will surely let us know, but we don't want to know the sex, you know, of the child. And she looked at me like I was, you know, had, you know, antlers coming out of my head. And I was like, I didn't think that was that controversial of a statement, but
it's
I guess it is.
Wild. It's wild when you realize how often we are dividing the world up by what we think people's genitals look like.
Right.
I mean, it's really wild. And that's been the experience of being.
And why that creates roles. Like why that would preclude one from, like in our household, like I do, my wife does a lot more cooking now, but I don't, you know, she doesn't always listen to the show, but if she listens to this episode, she will agree with me when I say I am the better cook. It's not even really a question.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with gender, right? It's a skill set. Like men can cook, boys can cook, women. There's nothing about gender to it. And yet we just start immediately ascribing all of these roles and behaviors. And this is what you're supposed to do if you have these particular sexual organs.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild when you're the parent of a trans kid, how often someone is asking a question where you realize that really what they're asking is they want to know what your kid's genitals look like.
Right.
And it's so weird and it's gross and it's and now our legislators are making it a top priority in our government.
Right.
I mean, we talked about the athlete ban, but the truth of it is the athlete ban's the least of it all. It's the medical bans.
Right. The preclusion for physicians to even have the conversations.
Yeah. And right. Like, first of all, I want to be very clear that I have a 9-year-old. He's not taking medicine. He's not right. Like, that isn't a part of his life. And he's not in therapy either, because this isn't a mental illness. It's just who he is. He's a really normal, well-adjusted kid. But these medical bans want to criminalize me doing what doctors and he might recommend.
Right.
And right, like, what, why are they, why is our government getting involved in healthcare and the best decisions of doctors and all of the mainstream medical organizations? And right, what happened to small government here exactly? And parental rights.
What's
and,
left, right? The guns are as legal as they can be. Abortion is basically as illegal as it can be. What's left to go after now, other than, you know, the most vulnerable groups that have the hardest time getting the best advocacy because they're A, smaller groups, B, things that people don't necessarily understand, and we always fear what we don't understand.
Yeah, and look, trans kids are maybe the most threatening thing that there is to a traditionalist white Christian worldview.
Sure.
Right? It violates all of the rules and all of the structures and all the ways that things are organized. It's why, truthfully, trans girls have a much harder time of it than trans boys, because trans girls also get the misogyny of it all.
Right.
Right. You even hear it from some of these legislators who they sort of get, you can tell they come from such a patriarchal worldview that they sort of get the idea of why a girl might want to be a boy.
Sure.
But right. A boy becoming a girl, which is how they see this in their eyes, right? Violates all of the rules. And I think that's what's happening. I think it provokes a disgust reaction.
Sure.
In so many of them. And it's why we come and we lobby, because we have to get them to see our kids as human beings and as just another way of living life. I mean, it's what I love about studying this and looking at this from a Jewish perspective. You know, right. We have thousands of years of stories of trans people. We have 2,000-year-old texts that talk about there being 6 or 7 different genders.
I had no idea.
Right? Like, it's wild. We have stories of Jews who transitioned in the shtetl in the 1800s. And were totally accepted. I mean, trans people have always been here. It's always been a way of being human.
Right. It's one of those, you mentioned the, you know, the kind of the Christian nationalist side of it. I was brought up Southern Baptist. And, you know, the amount of times that there are songs and lessons and things. I used to go to this thing called Children's Church, and they pound it pretty hard, right? Of like, this is how God made me. This is how you were made. The way you're made is special. It's actually like the one thing, I'm a huge Mr. Rogers guy, except like that was like the one of the few things with him was like, he was very hard on like, this is how God made you.
But you know, he went back and changed that song. Do you know about this?
He did go back and change that. You're right.
Yeah. He recorded another version of that. Once he learned about the existence of trans kids, is what the story goes.
He is such an interesting figure in the in the context of, you know, modern Christianity. And like, I always talk about like, he's like, to me, the last real celebrity Christian that was like a true, like really modeled the behavior that like it's supposed to be about, kind of a thing. I don't know.
Maybe Bono.
Fun and fascinating. Bono. That's funny. Yeah. And I think that probably also is just like one of those things that, you know, you mentioned studying it from a Jewish perspective, there's all this history. From a Christian perspective, the, you know, what we're taught is to ignore anything like that, right? Anything from a Jewish text, other than the fact that the Old Testament, you know, we know there's some overlap. That's like, like what you get. And the rest of it is just like, yeah, they're just wrong. there's this other thing, but you know, bringing that out front, how much does that influence? I mean, you do so much work with that community. How much has your faith intersected with that and led you to that?
Oh, you know, my faith and my Jewish identity are central to this. And actually, I think it's one of the interesting things when you look at the people in the state capitol who are showing up to protect trans kids from our government is, and I hate to say this because it's only going to attract anti-Semites, but it's overwhelmingly made up of Jews. Mm. It's made me so proud when you look around Jeff City on these testimony days, just how many people are coming from the Jewish community to show up for these kids.
Do you think that's a historical context thing where you've posted about this some, and I've talked about it on the show. I just talked about it yesterday during the opening statement. This white Christian nationalism. And I want to be very clear. Like, I think the phrase Christian nationalism is not not inclusive of all Christian believers. I don't think it is inclusive of all sects of the Christian religion.
Oh, yeah. Some of the fiercest defenders in Jeff City of trans kids are Christian pastors and ministers.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
Yep. Right. There's still a ton of good, compassionate stuff coming from
hashtag
from that,
not all Christians.
Right. From that group. But I got to imagine that's part of what, you know, from the Jewish community, part of what has to drive that is the hypersensitivity to the historical context of what we're seeing, the rhetoric that we're seeing, because some of it, it's not even just like similar rhetoric. Some of it is straight up lifted, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really look, I think what we're seeing is a proto-fascist kind of movement. I think we're seeing it all over the world.
Yeah.
But I really think it's what we're seeing here in Missouri, certainly too. And it's not, look, it's not the true believers that scare me, truthfully.
Right.
It's the number of GOP reps that we go into their office and they tell us how much they hate these bills, but they feel like they need to vote for them because they're good politics.
Right.
But those are the people that terrify me. And those are the people that have helped me truthfully understand what happened in Europe in the 20s and 30s. And thank God, you know, I don't have a better understanding of the 40s yet, but here's hoping it stays in the early 30s. Yeah.
It's crazy that we've reached a point in the looking glass here to say that it's good politics to go after a group of folks who,
like my kid, right? Just leave us alone. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to me that that's good politics to be that extreme with stuff. And I think it kind of goes back to like saying before about the context of, you know, exposure and just people hearing the story and what you all are doing by going and testifying, keeping this in the news. You know, there's a ton of coverage on it. I hope it's breaking through. I mean, it's part of why I was, you know, you had reached out to me about coming on, and I was already very interested in having you on because of that. Cause I think this needs to be in front of people more. You know, what do you think is something that if people understood it about your world, about your son's world, that would make it easier to kind of explain why this is so bad?
You know, one of the realities of politics right now is that for the right, they're using us as their main political weapon. They're chewing us up. And on the left, there's a lot of confusion and questions. And what it means is that often we feel like we're standing alone to a large extent, I gotta say. You know, I mentioned before that story of a Jew who transitioned in the shtetl in the 1800s. But the other part of this that I think is so key, and it speaks to, you know, the education bill we're going to hear tomorrow, truthfully, is that we only know about this man who transitioned in the shtetl because in the 1930s, during the Nazi Olympics, it turns out that there were all these athletes who were going off and competing in the women's games, and they were coming back as men.
Mm.
And there was this huge uproar in the American press in the 30s about, you know, this whole new trans thing sweeping the nation. But this guy writes in and says, no, you crazy people, let me tell you the story of this man who transitioned in the shtetl long before this in the 1800s. And the reality is when we don't teach this history, it makes people who are different always seem scary.
Yeah.
And so we haven't taught trans history, and we haven't taught the existence of genderqueer people by and large. And it means that they're scary and they go against all the rules that society sets about how we're supposed to act and, you know, look, how we're supposed to dress, which bathroom we're supposed to use. You know, it's pretty fundamental to how we build our world.
It was for so long seen as, you know, an alternative lifestyle, a subculture. And yeah, I mean, if you use the entirety of the pressures of society and law to push it down, of course it's going to be a subculture. Of course it's going to be alternative to what you see on the regular basis, because if it's not given room to breathe, how is it possibly going to, you know, and then it becomes a learned behavior, right? You hide.
Yeah. And look, fundamentally, that's what we're going to Jeff City to fight about, is we don't want our kids to be raised having to hide themselves.
Right.
And we want to raise a generation of kids who just are always accepted as who they are and who don't have trauma around who they are and don't have pain around what their body looks like or how they're treated socially or in my world, I'm able to do that.
Right.
My kid is accepted entirely by his family and by all of our friends and by his school, which celebrates him, and by my religious community, which celebrates him. And I say it over and over again, but the only bullies in our lives work in the Missouri legislature.
Yeah. So how about the ones who are basically doing the, hey, you know, you can just move, you can just leave Missouri and just go someplace that's friendlier. I mean, you know, isn't that a totally rational response to something like this?
Yeah, I had a Republican legislator, I'm blanking on his name, and I don't even feel bad about forgetting his name, who specifically said that to me on Twitter a couple of days ago, that we should just leave the state if we don't like it.
Yeah.
Look, my kids are seventh generation Missourians. I live in the house that my grandpa built, that my dad grew up in, that I grew up in, that my son sleeps in my childhood bedroom. My folks are here. I work at the synagogue I grew up at.
Yeah.
I have a life here, and right. You know, I have a right to be in Missouri. This right. is where my family has been. And these people are trying to drive us out. I mean, it's yeah. clear. They're trying to drive out families of trans kids or drive those kids underground. And a lot of kids, God forbid, are going to be driven to suicide. We know that.
Yeah.
We know that this is going to kill kids. We know that this legislation, not even it passing, but just the existence of right. this legislation and the dozens and dozens of bills that the legislature is publicly debating about the human dignity of trans kids. We know there are kids who will take their lives because of this.
Yeah.
It is literally killing children.
It is so interesting. You know, it's not just, it's kind of inclusive of anything that gets categorized as left, you know, at the left, whatever it is. Whether it's an LGBTQ issue or, you know, healthcare, you know, whatever gets categorized as the left. But this idea of, well, if, you know, just leave. And I love what, you know, what you're saying there. And that's something that I've been saying. It's why these shows exist, right? Is I'm eighth generation. I've you know, seen the genealogy. I have family who's been in Missouri since well before Missouri was a state. Like, why do I have to go someplace just because you and I disagree on politics? Why don't I get to stay and assert my beliefs? Why don't I get to stay and assert yep. my position yep. and fight for what I think is right in my state and what I think Missouri should stand for and what I think my community should have in it? You know, disagree. If you disagree with me, leave. To me, I mean, it is an admission of the incredible lack of argument that they actually have if the position is we'll just leave.
Yeah, I mean that's what's noteworthy is see you go to these testimony days where they're hearing these bills targeting trans kids, right? And they'll have a few different people that they've managed to drag in to testify in favor of them. Mm-hmm. They'll have a lobbyist from out of state who sure. works for some org.
The organization that helped write the bill that's in 12 different legislatures
exactly.
that's exactly the same bill.
Exactly. And then they'll have someone, particularly on the medical bills, and these are the ones that really scare us. They'll have someone who will come in who's a doctor who will testify from some organization that sounds like an official organization, like mm-hmm. the American Academy of Pediatric Doctors.
Right.
And then you'll Google it, and it turns out actually that's not really what it sounds like.
Right.
It's some fringy right-wing white Christian organization. That looks and sounds like it's a real organization, but is not, because of course all of the real organizations are supportive of the policies that trans parents are trying to, or parents of trans kids are trying to keep legal.
Right.
And then they will have the religious nuts.
Right.
And it's person after person after person going up and quoting the Bible. Because they don't have a good argument in favor of any of these bills. It's
right.
only religious arguments and it's only scientific quacks.
That's the part that I can't wrap my head around is the First Amendment side of it, where, you know, the freedom of religion, the freedom to exercise religion in the First Amendment is so much different than legislating based on your yeah. religion.
Yeah.
And this disconnect that seems to just be running rampant right now.
Well, yeah, you know, I work with Rabbi Susan Talvey, who's one of the named rabbis on the religious freedom lawsuit in Missouri around abortion rights.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing. And tomorrow, actually, in the birth certificate bill. So they're trying to make it illegal, impossible to change the gender marker on your birth certificate for trans people.
Right.
To give you context, my son was born in Illinois, so it was $15 and a note from his pediatrician. Because you know, you have more civil liberties your entire
the
life.
The tyrannical state of Illinois, as I understand it.
Yeah, exactly. but they're trying to make that illegal. And so I'm going to testify on religious liberty grounds. Judaism has long understood there to be multiple genders. For thousands of years, we've talked about this. This is an imposition of a certain vision of Christianity on the rest of us.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely
a certain vision is an important phrase, a certain vision of Christianity. It is a hyper hardcore sect that is, you know, as much as some of it is what I learned, at the end of the day, most of the folks that I went to church with weren't on a daily basis preaching hate, you know, and teaching hate. And yet that's what seems to have come out of.
One of my favorite pieces of data is that there's been a huge uptick since the Trump era in Americans, white Americans, who describe themselves as evangelicals.
Hmm.
But it turns out that those Americans who now describe themselves as evangelicals, by and large, don't go to church.
Right, right.
It's about a vision of white Christian American society.
Right.
It's not about faith as we have long understood that.
I don't understand how your son's existence is a threat to the culture of anybody else. I just can't square that circle.
Oh, I totally get it. I totally get it. You know, the most fundamental way that this nationalism divides the world is into units or into hierarchies of power.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, whiteness is fundamentally a hierarchy of power, that no matter how bad of a situation you are in, if you're a white person, at least there's always black people below you. Right? That's how white supremacy works. And right. In many ways, even more fundamental to our world than whiteness and blackness, than race, is gender.
Right.
And dividing people up by what we imagine their genitals look like. I mean, think about if you're a gender essentialist, right? If you're one of these GOP members who really want to divide the world this way, think about the fact that literally the pronouns you use in a sentence to talk about someone is just describing their genitals.
Yeah.
Right. That it's really weird, but it's also really basic to how we speak.
I've never thought of it that way, but you're right.
Right. Think about it. A fancy restaurant, how they'll go around and deliver the food first to the people who they think have traditionally women's genitals, and then they'll give them to the people who they think have men's genitals. Right. It's really weird, but it's everywhere, and right. It's fundamental to everything. And so, I mean, I think that's why the existence of trans people is so scary to so many traditionalists, because it shows that the binary that they are building their world on, the clean lines, don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite statistic around this is the number of intersex people. Now, this isn't trans, this is intersex, meaning people who biologically are not one or the other,
right.
not men or women, or entirely, you know, they're not a part of that binary. The percentage of intersex people in our world is about the same as the number of redheads in the population. Right? That's a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
It's a lot of people, right? I'm looking at you right now. I don't see you. You've got your hat on, but you've got a reddish beard, right?
Yeah.
I
have a redheaded brother. Very red. Very, very red.
So that's the same percentage in the general population.
Interesting.
As intersex people. We all have friends and family members who are intersex and don't realize it. Sometimes it manifests in things like fertility issues. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah.
I've always wondered about it in terms of just, you know, just the way that it upsets the apple cart in terms of it's evolution versus creation, right? It's this idea that if there is creation, then intersex, trans, all of that, any of it, that it couldn't exist because there's this, you know, we are made in his image, right? We are fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God under creationism. But if you think of it in a biological sense, if you think of it in an evolutionary sense, and you just think about the way evolution works and that there's just constantly there's just this churn of just
no true binary, right?
Right. Like, there's just this always this churn going on. And we have all these examples in the animal kingdom of, you know, self, what is it? Seahorses, I think, right? Can
exactly. There's, right? There's all sorts of examples. Look, I also think it's funny as a rabbi, because that line in Genesis that man right. and woman, God made them, is understood by the rabbinic tradition to mean that we were originally created intersex, man and woman.
Interesting.
And that in fact, we're only sort of split apart and we go and find our other half, right? It's part of the ancient soulmate mythology.
Interesting.
Hedwig and the Angry Inch, if anyone wants to see a great movie that references this. Yeah. But yeah, right. So this line that so many of the Christian nationalists will come and testify about in these hearings for Jewish communities understood in a quite queer way.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Well, Rabbi, you've been very generous with your time. I know you've got to get some sleep.
Oh my God. Yeah. People are showing up at 5:30 in the morning in my front yard.
Well, good luck and Godspeed and safe travels. And how can folks help out? You know, if they're listening to this and they're going, man, you know, how can I get in the fight? What's a resource?
Yeah, we would always love you in Jeff City. Promo Missouri are the organizers who we work with, the great folk at Promo Missouri. And we didn't talk about it, but a few of the organizers, myself, Shira Berkowitz, who works at Promo, and a few other people created a summer camp. I guess you said in the introduction.
Yeah.
Camp Indigo Point, and we're trying to raise money for scholarships. So if anyone wants to send a queer kid from a red state to 2 weeks where everyone around them looks like them, we'd love your help paying for that.
Very good. Very good. We will, I'll make sure we have a link for that in the show notes. And appreciate your time. And thanks for what you're doing out there.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for the pod.
The Heartland Pod is a production of Midmap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com, online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.